Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. We have one of my favorite people in the world, Bill Burr. Definitely my favorite comedian now for many years. Bill's also a big fan of racing, and if you happen to catch his Monday morning podcast, you will have heard the occasional sprinkling of racing stories and news. Caught my attention a couple years ago when he mentioned visiting the Indy 500 on his own, and so that was something that made me really want to get together with Bill and talk about where racing came into his life. So we had about 20 minutes on the phone. Formula One is his new thing. He loves it. Doesn't claim to understand all of it, which that is what makes his appreciation for it and his documentation of some of the 2016 championship on his Monday Morning podcast. Just absolutely brilliant. So got into Formula One, discussed that, spoke about a lot of things, got into Trump a little bit, cracked open the door on Trump's short-lived nomination as a pace car driver at the Indy 500, spoke about a couple of other racing-related things, both Vince Neil's 25th anniversary of his attempt to race in Indy Lights. That's another feature I'll have coming up here in the near future, and also Randy Lanier's life, which he wasn't aware of, so hopefully Bill get a chance to check that out. Spoke about Le Mans. He's infatuated by France, so on top of getting him to the Monaco Grand Prix, need to get him to the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and so hopefully sometime middle of the season, we're going to try and get together and get Bill's take on the first half of the 2017 Formula One season, minus Nico Rosberg, which he delves into and has a lot of fun there. So you can catch every new episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on your favorite podcast aggregator, and we also have a lovely little Facebook page, the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, you can sign up for and get everything as it comes out fresh. So, off we go with Bill Burr.
All right, let's do it.
So, I grew up here in California in the Bay Area. Racing's a pretty popular sport, always has been out here. I can't say what it was like for you growing up in Massachusetts. Just curious how that motor racing, automotive passion came into your life.
Well, I always liked cars. When I was a kid, I used to watch, like, stock car racing, and I used to build the models, like Cale Yarborough's car, Darrell Waltrip.
Nice.
I was really into that stuff. We used to, Indy 500 was a big deal for whatever reason in my family, A.J. Foyt, Mario Andretti, and that was, like, into the Formula One stuff.
Yeah.
And, but it wasn't until I got out to California, because the cars last so much longer out here, that I really started getting into the cars, and I started getting into, learning how cars actually worked. And because now there was a, there's the internet and stuff, and you can really just teach yourself all this stuff about cars and watching people work on them. Forget about, like, those Gas Monkey shows and all that. And I just got into it. The next thing you know, I bought an old 68 F100. And I don't know, I just kept getting more and more and more and more into it. And then I started getting into, like, last year. Like, the whole Formula One thing just came out of my interest in France, all things France. I love it. The Paris and the language, the food, just everything about it. Tour de France, I always used to watch, and then eventually that got me into watching Monaco, which I never knew where that was. I never understood what a sovereign state was or anything like that, and I just started watching that every year because it was in France.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, well, maybe I'll watch when's the next race. This will be something else to get into, because it's kind of a weird time of year, you know, because race hockey and basketball wind down. It's the dog days of August, of baseball. You know, I just needed something else. I was like, am I going to get into tennis? I didn't know what. And I just started following Formula One last year, and I kind of got into it.
I love that. And your sporadic commentary in your podcast about Formula One has just been the best thing ever. One of the things that piqued my interest, though, and this was maybe a couple years back in your podcast, you visited the Indy 500 once or twice, just kind of on your own. And I love that idea of, you know, forget trying to call in and get the super VIP, this, that, and the other. It sounded like you just wanted to go check it out. What was that experience like for you, the first time seeing the largest single-day sporting event in the world? Cars doing 230 miles an hour. I mean, it's kind of America's defining event going back to 1911. But what did you think when you first got there?
Well, you forget how big it has to be in order for somebody to go, for people to drive 200 miles an hour. You always just picture it like it's going to, I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but I just couldn't believe how long it was, how big it was, and that there was all these seats going. I mean, I used to get blown away by some of how big some of the college football stadiums were, but then that was the first thing I was blown away by, the
first time I went to it, I actually went to the race. I went to the race in 95, and then I went again in 96. And then my life got really good with, like, stand-up and all. Because I was going, wow, we should go every year, because it's just, like, a great time, you know. I went with, like, three buddies of mine, and we would just, you know, you just pick cars out of a hat, you know, and bet on the cars. And we had all these, like, 900 different ways to gamble. We sat on the first year we went, we sat on the inside of one of the turns, which I liked, sitting on the inside, because I figured if they were going to spin out, they were going to go away from us.
Exactly. See, smart man. A lot of people don't realize that. You get wheels and tires in your teeth if you're sitting in the wrong place.
Yeah, I'm not into that at all. And then the next time we actually sat in the grandstands along the finish line, and that was the last time I went. But it was just such a, you bring a cooler in, you get your, what I really thought was amazing when I went to it was the space age technology that was, you know, in pit row.
Yeah.
And then if you literally went like 50 yards into the stands, there I was, like one of the biggest dopes ever, drinking a beer, just screaming as cars were going by. Just the dynamic of that was hilarious to me.
So one of the things I've been curious about, and this maybe, or this definitely draws back to our spouses. I worked in IndyCar for a long time on the team side as a mechanic and that kind of stuff, and was running a team a few years after I met my wife, but brought her to Indy in 2005, and you go there, and as you probably witnessed, everybody kind of looks like you and me, and at least for her experience, she didn't really want to be left alone. What do you think about the lovely Nia? You think she'd be down with being, you know, a handful in a crowd of 400,000 at Indy, or do you think that might be pushing the boundaries a little too much?
I don't. She would go to that because she'd be bored out of her mind. I don't think she'd care about whoever was staring at us. I mean, I don't care what people think. So, I mean, she just wouldn't go to that because she would. But she likes basketball. She's enjoyed hockey. Like most people who don't know that they like hockey, they have to go to a game to actually, you know, see how amazing it is. But I think that's one of those things where, like, because how long a race is, even as amazing it is to see those cars go around, like, you got to be into it, or after a while, it's just going to give you a headache. I do know when I watch Formula One, it drives her nuts because it sounds like a bunch of bees like 2 hours or whatever. But, so I don't even think I would have to wonder about something like that because she wouldn't go.
Well, my wife just calls it boy time and then curses at me and goes into the other room when I'm watching TV at home. So your Formula One commentary, I love the fact that you picked up on the dramas of Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg, the Mercedes team, some of the crazy players around them like Niki Lauda and Toto Wolff and some of these bizarre figures. I mean, I've grown up with F1, so this kind of madness is normal. Does it seem strange, though, to someone who's learning about the sport to realize that there's so many levels and layers? This isn't just Smash Mouth game where you try and kill the guy on the other side of the line. It's a pretty complex stuff. Do you enjoy that part of the drama?
I found it interesting just as far as, like, you know, I didn't really know that there's the Mercedes team, the Ferrari, and all of that type of stuff. Like, because I hadn't watched it so long. To me, when I was a kid, it was just a bunch of people trying to drive as fast as they could. I didn't realize you had teammates. And then I hadn't watched in so long, and, like, the level of communication that they have and what they can say to the driver, and then the fact that the steering wheel now looks like a little Game Boy, and they're pushing buttons as they're driving the way they are. And I don't know, there's always egos and there's always people that want to be the best, so I kind of knew that that was going to be going on. I didn't think that was going to be that overt. But the one thing that I did find weird is it just seemed every race was a race for the first turn, and whoever made it through the first turn in first place, unless they had mechanical failure or just did something stupid, it just seemed like you won the race.
Yeah.
All you had to do was just drive around the track. So that was a little, like, because when I was mentioned that, a lot of racing fans were like, oh, man, you missed it. You missed it back in the day. It didn't used to be like that. Now the best drama is the race for, like, fourth or fifth place or third place because they're more, like, bunched up. Just because it's closer, because they're kind of driving through that dirty air where the guy out front is just cruising. That's something that if I was, on the board of the F1 or whatever, that would be concerning to me. That it's like,
I mean, as exciting as it is to watch those guys race for the third or fourth, everybody wants to see who wins. And if you kind of know basically who's going to win, like 6 seconds into the race, that's sort of odd to me.
That's one of many problems they're trying to address to make the fact that, hey, I'm tuning in to watch the race. Well, that was a good, efficient use of my time. I can check out after lap two and go mow the lawn or whatever else.
It's literally turn one. Every race I saw, whoever got into turn one, if you didn't screw up at the start, which I still don't understand what happened. What, do they let the clutch out too quick? I don't even get, like, it's like, looks like me taking a driver's test. I mean, it amazes me that guys at that level. What I really just thought was like, oh, these cars must be so, like, finicky, like, so touchy that one little move and you're absolutely, you're done for. I don't know, but having said all that, I still really, really enjoyed it and am excited about possibly going to an event. I want to go to Monaco. I know they have that one in Austin every year, but to me, like, Formula One, it'd be weird to see it in the United States. Like, I would feel like I'd have to be in Europe or in Asia or something like that. Even the one in Canada seems lame. They don't respect us. We're the new world. You know what I mean? Like, Asia has, in Asia, there's a lot of mystery over there. And, you know, Europe always has that, we're a cut above you guys. It just seems like a snobby sport. So it's just weird to me when it's in, what was it? It's in Montreal and it's also in Austin, Texas, right?
Yeah, and you're dead on. You want to feel thoroughly dismissed and unimportant. I mean, that's part of the Formula One pleasure. If it feels normal, that's a part where Texas never made sense to me. Formula One in Texas. Okay, it's a great track. It's a big party town, but I think it does knock some of the shine off of that exclusive, you know, pay however much you want, and we're still going to piss on you kind of thing that, I guess, separates Formula One.
Well, that's the whole reason why you go to Europe. You don't go to Europe for the culture. You go there to just see how arrogant the people are going to treat you and how they're going to, like... You know, Europeans come over to the U.S. and they literally are criticizing the U.S. in the U.S. to a U.S. citizen. And it's hilarious. You're just like, do you realize how rude you're being, right? Like, how ignorant you are. And the fact that you're now talking to me in this with this arrogant tone, it's one of my favorite things. And it's one of the reasons why I want to become fluent in another language, because I want to play up the dumb American and just hear what people say. I'm not saying I'm not a dumb American, but, you know, these, I don't know.
No, I've been to France, I think 10 or 12 times. Last year was my 10th consecutive to cover the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So that's when I would say, on top of Monaco, Le Mans is rightly regarded as the world's greatest motor race, and that. It's their version of the Indy 500, hundreds of thousands of people, but absolutely insane technology, plus something that I think you would enjoy as well, because you can kind of enjoy it on your own terms. It's not so much of a get a seat in a grandstand and sit there for 24 hours. You go wander around, you see these cars doing crazy speed, crazy technology. You've got the drinking for Holland section, you've got Germans, Belgians. It's completely insane, and that's one of the things I love about that race, too.
What time of year is that?
That is middle of June every year. So it usually follows Monaco by about 2 or 3 weeks.
I got to check that out. Huh? Now I got something else on the bucket list.
So we've been blessed with a lot of great and also a lot of horrific racing movies throughout the years. Are there any that you liked growing up, you know, from... frickin' Burt Reynolds in a chicken suit and Stroker Ace, to we've had Talladega Nights recently. We had Ron Howard's movie.
Don't forget Kenny Rogers and Brewster Baker. Six Pack, whatever that movie was called.
Brilliant. I have that on VHS.
Somehow picks on these six kids, not really concerned where the hell he got them.
Oh, yeah. Stealing children for a movie.
I like the Gumball Rally. I like the Cannonball Run movies. I like those Fast and Furious movies. I just like cars. So, I mean, the script, Vanishing Point was a great one.
Mm.
There's one, what's his face is in? Who's that singer? I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. But I always thought I'd see you. I'm going to keep singing so you get it one more time. James Taylor.
James Taylor.
Yeah, he was on... Something Black Cop, and they were racing like they were making their money drag racing. It was they had a 55 Chevy Bel Air, Well, it might have been this 210. I think it was a Bel Air.
I have to find this.
Yeah, you got to check it out. What's cool is the car's considered, like, when they make it, that car wasn't a classic yet. So it's kind of considered like a piece of crap. You know what I mean? Like, this is a 16-year-old, this is a 15-year-old car. As opposed to now, they someone would totally redo it, try to bring it to one of those beat them options. Body art restoration, numbers matching.
Oh, Jesus.
Baby boomers love.
We're sounding like a Bear Jackson auction here. Is that something?
Bear Jackson, there you go.
Do you love those or hate those, by the way? Because it seems like everything's a muscle car, and it's kind of the same car being sold every year at every show, year after year. I keep looking for, like, throw in a Volvo. I want to see some totally random stuff, but I don't know. Maybe that's me.
No. Yeah, and no, I'm kind of over at this point. It's just a Mopar power coming up. It's got a Hemi. It's all the same. Everything has a Hemi. Or it's a Shelby, I don't know. I mean, I just like, you know, I would even take like a 67 Cadillac Eldorado every once in a while.
Good man.
Something different.
Good man. You ever had any fantasies or real desires to be a race car driver? To trade life, you know, if you could trade your life for a day with a famous race car driver or someone,
no.
You're like, I'd want to be that
guy. You know, as much as I like watching people go fast, I don't like going fast. I like just cruising along. That's why I like old Cadillacs. I got an old pickup truck. You know, I like having speed if it's there that I if I need it. You know, I can, you know, make it through a yellow light,
something like that. But I'm not into like racing other people. I just don't care. Like, oh yeah, you car faster, you know, good for you. All right, I'll see you. I'll get there literally 8 seconds after you, and I think I'm all right.
But I love the fact that you take helicopter lessons, so you're happy to, like, fall out of the sky and die, but on the ground, not too fast.
The ground is way more dangerous.
Jesus.
Way infinitely more dangerous.
I've been thinking recently, and I don't know if I'm way off base here, but I'm thinking that George W. Bush was probably the first real NASCAR president. Like, he's a guy you could imagine sitting next to in a NASCAR race in the grandstands, and the guy'd be eating it up. And I think about Trump, and I think he'd never be in the grandstands next to you, but I just have a really strong feeling he's the first president elected by NASCAR fans.
But you know, a lot of rich people voted for him too. Like, there's a stereotype that, like, every liberal is, you know, some tree hugger that doesn't want to work, vegan, and then that everybody, you know, who voted for Trump is some toothless racist that came out of the woods and tipped the scales in his favor. And that's, you know, one thing I learned from doing the road is that people are really complex. You know, you can read the stats on somebody, like, oh, they did X, Y, and Z, and you still can't go, okay, this plus this plus this equals this, and this is their behavior, and that's why they do it. Like, people are way more complex than that.
Well, if you can't boil people down to stereotypes.
Hillary was as polarizing as Trump was, and I think that Bernie Sanders might have been a better matchup, which is easy to say after Hillary loses. I look at Donald Trump, and he looks like a Formula One guy to me. It seems like he'd be in Monaco, and he'd pull up in a yacht that says Trump on it, and he'd be right there at the finish line. I mean, that's a really arrogant race. Those people, like, you have so much money, you pull up in your yacht, and you're one of the people blowing. You have your captain blow the horn as the winner of a Formula One race goes across. And then what do you do later? Gamble with James Bond at a casino? He doesn't seem like a NASCAR guy to me. He seems like a Formula One guy. And George Bush was like, he's actually, you know, he's a Yale guy.
Yeah.
Dad's a Yale guy there, all in. So, I mean, I think because he came from Texas that people kind of had that idea that he was like this cowboy. But, you know, he wasn't a rancher at all. That guy was, he's a blue blood. So, I don't know. Not saying he wouldn't have a good time. But I think if he got hammered at a NASCAR event, it would just be the stress of being the son of a, you know, before he was president. Like, to be the son of, like, a former vice president, former president, former head of CIA, and a war hero. That's a pretty tough one to put on your kid. Like, hey, here you go, son. There's some shoes you got to try and fill.
Yeah, you're just trying to keep the gun out of his mouth.
Probably he always had, like, a kind of, like, looking around. Probably brutally insecure. I know I would have been.
You know, there's one other Trump racing thing that comes to mind is, he was named as the pace car driver. I don't know how this happened, but he was named as the pace car driver for the Indy 500 in 2011. And that got shot down, unfortunately. Kind of went off the rails when he started on the whole Obama birther thing. There's a lot of there's a Facebook group that got really uppity, and I think they contributed to getting him out of that opportunity. Feels like we lost out some comedy gold there. Donald Trump, Indy 500 pace car driver. I just see that thing spinning off the rails pretty quickly.
Well, he would just be riding in it, right? He was riding the back of it, that's all.
I just don't think he'd pull off.
You know what's funny? I got into a big argument about my buddy last night. I'm like, the level of crap Trump is getting, my buddy was saying. He goes, you know, you never saw this with Hillary. You didn't see it with Obama and blah, 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 blah. It's like, and it was just like, nah, you did. It's just done in a different way. Just 1%ers don't have to, like, protest in the street. Like, Donald Trump had the money to, like, go on. He's famous and all that stuff. And he like, financed his own investigation of the president of the United States. So they're all shit, you know. They're all shit. Everybody, you know, everybody out here in Hollywood loves Obama. Right before he left, evidently he signed a bill that allowed the government to go after alternative news sources on the internet, prosecute them or something like that, or shut them down about putting out air quote fake news. And it's just basically, so what is fake news? News that you guys don't agree with? So basically you're not entitled. I think you're entitled to an alternative opinion until you start making traction, and then you're not entitled to it anymore. That's as far as I can tell.
To me, this is a bizarre thing where we actually are going on a daily ride with the president to see what new barriers we can plow down, what new social conventions we can deconstruct. I just don't know if any of us expected this to be such an immediate change in what we would consider normal daily lives. Maybe we should have seen it, and maybe it was always going to happen.
Well, Obama was an immediate change, too. He was an immediate change, and then the Republicans were like, well, we're not going to have any of you bring to us. We're just going to say no, because they had the House. To a lot of people on the right, his nationwide health care plan was as radical as Trump. It's all like that perspective thing. So I try to, like, I don't know, I try not to get too worked up about it, because you'll go nuts. I try to be empathetic. And I exist in this weird world where I couldn't stand Hillary or Trump, and kind of like Bernie Sanders, but then was brutally disappointed when he gave Hillary the nod after he lost to her. And I just felt like, I get it, he's playing the game, but he just kind of lost a lot of credibility with me. He's going to tell this me? This person he's just been going off on, saying how horrible she was. The second you lose, you're like, yeah, you know, she's all right.
You're a guy who's always had great stories. You're always looking for great personal tales or things that you come across. And I thought of a couple from motor racing that, at least for me, they seem like signature Bill Burr pieces. One, I don't know if you know about this. This is all true. Coming into 2017, we are celebrating the 25-year anniversary of Vince Neil, lead singer of Motley Crue, who tried a season of Indy Lights, which is kind of like the college ball for IndyCar, in 1992. So there was a year, 25 years ago, where Vince fucking Neil decided he wanted to be a race car driver and wanted to attempt to prepare himself to race an Indy car. And who was his sponsor? Say No to Drugs. And who owned his team? Ex-police officers. The name of the team? Pig Racing. You can't make this shit up. I can picture him doing lines of coke. Oh, horribly. I mean, it was like Bambi on the ice. I mean, it was as bad an idea as that sounds. It turned out to be exactly as bad in reality. Yet, this is a guy who decided, you know, that I can do anything. If I can front a band and sell out a 8 trillion seat arena, of course I could be an IndyCar driver. And it went down in flames.
You can't get mad at a guy for trying. You know who did all right? That Frankie Munoz kid. He actually got a contract. The kid from Malcolm in the Middle.
He did.
So you never know. You never know what's going to happen. He gave it a shot. You know, and the whole Say No to Drugs thing, I know he struggled with sobriety. He tried to get sober and that type of thing. So, you know, maybe that was during a good period. I mean, looking at him now, I think, you know, being a racer, he'd have to get his weight down. Definitely have to get his weight down because he'd be costing you time every lap.
Well, I
myself included, though.
Well, my fat ass couldn't fit in anything, so I probably shouldn't be talking too much here. So there's another story, which I'll have to send you the link to. This one is one of my favorites because it brings drug trafficking and the cocaine cowboys era together. There's a guy named Randy Lanier, who recently got out of prison after 30 years. He was American sports car champion in 1984. He funded his entire racing team by smuggling hundreds of tons of marijuana by boat from Colombia to Florida. And it gets better. One of his, quote, sponsors, he was partners in a shipbuilding company that sold speedboats to the Miami police to help them catch the cocaine dealers. So here we have a sports car champion, a Hall of Fame weed smuggler, selling speedboats to essentially knock out the competition. I think that's the best thing ever. Yet again, this is a story that I think...
Is that been optioned yet to be a movie? Because I will go see that in a minute. I've got to cut that out. That's amazing. Well, before we go, when does the Formula One race start? Season starts. It's this month, right?
Starts in March. Starts in every March in Australia.
Do you think Nico Rosberg retired so he could get out of his contract with Mercedes and then come back a few years later with somebody else?
No, not at all. Nico realized that he caught lightning in a bottle. Lewis had his number from the moment they met, kicked his ass up and down. Lewis had a bit of an off season. I don't know why exactly, but I mean, you know, you see with every athlete, right? It's not like Larry Bird was perfect every season or Dr. J put up, you know, record-breaking numbers every season. Lewis had a little bit of a dip in performance around the mid-season and fell behind. And Nico, I think, very rightly realized this winning the world championship was his life's dream and aspiration. With Lewis as his teammate, it was never going to happen. Lewis unraveled a little bit. Nico gained the advantage, got the championship, and I think woke up the next morning and realized, this ain't happening again. It is best for me to ride off into the sunset, because if I come back next year, this is most likely going to revert to the way things normally go. So I don't.
Yeah, but still won. What about all the money he's walking away from? All the fun of driving the car. How long has he been doing it?
He's been racing since he was, I think 5, 6. I mean, he's been doing. Granted, the guy's 31.
All right. Hey, all right. Well, I hope he saved his money. And all of that, that's cool then. If you can walk away, I respect that.
See, I that's where I don't want to say I disrespect it, because look, if that's what makes a man happy, who am I to say he's wrong? It just stands out as strange to me, as someone who's built their life around competing, being the best, trying to be the best, to become the best, and then decide enough. Like, I've just never considered that to be a switch you can flip on or off. Like, at least for the standard or the stereotype. Hell, Jordan's 90 years old and can't stop competing.
Look, if I had to go to Vegas and bet on this, I would say he comes back within 2 or 3 years.
I love it.
Without a doubt. He's going to be bored. I'm trying to think of, how do you then do another job that's going to be as exciting as that? It doesn't exist.
And that's part of where I think there's something bizarre here. Like you, I don't know how, he said he wanted to be with family, wanted to raise his young family. Again, no argument there, but I don't know how you go from chasing or leading Lewis through the tunnel at Monaco to, pushing around your lawnmower in the backyard when Monaco's taking place.
Who's kidding who? He's going to have grounds people. But listen, I bet he was coming home and he was always bitching about Lewis and he just bitched too much to his wife and she was fine. Well, if you don't like it so much, just quit. You got enough money. She kind of called his bluff. And then he'd be like, all right. I think that's what happened with the Beatles. Everybody blames Yoko or Linda. I think that those poor women had to listen to John and Paul come home and bitch about each other. And then they just finally called their bluff. Well, just quit the band then. And then they went, okay, and started new bands with their wives in it.
Always a great idea. Now we need to think of an excuse to get Nico back, because I have to admit, without these two rivals, again, they really were the Magic and Bird of this era. Losing one of them, I'll never stop loving Formula One, but knowing that really dynamic heavyweight fight between the two teammates year after year has effectively lost one member, I don't know if I'm as excited about Formula One in 2017 as I would have been if Nico were still there.
Bob, someone will fill the void. It always happens.
Bill, really appreciate your time, brother. Hopefully, maybe mid-season, depending on if Formula One's been fun or a shit show, or maybe we can do a mid-season look back at how the year of Formula One has gone.
Without Nico, absolutely. Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you later.
And that was a great Bill Burr. Cannot wait to do our mid-season follow-up. Find out what other things about Formula One and motor racing in general that have piqued his interest. If you love Bill, you love his comedy, which I hope you do, because there is no one better working today. It's a brand new special on Netflix, Walk Your Way Out. Plenty of other of Bill's past comedy specials are on Netflix as well, so you've got, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 hours worth of Bill to enjoy there, and you've also got his Monday morning podcast. There's also his Thursday morning, Monday morning podcast, which comes out too, so lots of heapings of Bill. As I mentioned earlier, you can get the latest Marshall Pruitt podcast on iTunes and also sign up to be alerted when it pops up through our Facebook page. So, as always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.